Welcome to the Certified Skills in AI and Tech podcast, brought to you by Criterion. Criterion is a global leader in assessment solutions, providing software for test development and delivery, as well as test development services for low to high stakes certification programs.
Mohan, welcome to our podcast.
Thanks for having me, Buzz.
Awesome. And we have our Chief Revenue Officer, as always, Buzz Walker, with us.
Meet you,
Buzz. Good to meet you, Mohan.
Mohan, you know, you have a wealth of experience in the AI space. You're located right there in the heart of Silicon Valley. You know, you meet all these amazing graduates from Stanford. You know, what brought you to the AI space?
My rendezvous with AI started right from my undergrad days, where I did it in India, where like my undergrad was in biomedical engineering. And, you know, my interest in AI started right then, where like, you know, I've done a lot of work in medical signal processing and image processing, which are primarily the roots of AI back then. Like, you know, how do you classify ECG signals, EEG signals, EMG signals, or how do you, you know, looking at mammograms, how do you detect like cancerous tissues from, you know, the rest of the tissues using various techniques. And so it was in 1992 when I first started my work on AI. And wow. This was, yeah, using, you know, these old Pentium machines with math coprocessors. That was the work that we did. And yeah, we used backpropagation networks and a lot of, you know, old school image and signal processing techniques. But, you know, that's where I guess, like, you know, the classical machine learning is emanated from. All these signal processing theorists and generalists.
So 1992, you were involved in machine learning and AI. Did you see it becoming what it is today?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was all like, you know, back then, and it was the hope that one day the computer will catch up and things will definitely change. It was always that, like, you know, where when you have attended, like, you know, multiple IEEE conferences back then, right? Like, you know, various, like, you know, regional and national level meetings talking about cybernetics, or, you know, even AR, VR back then, like how remote surgeries are possible. It was. I mean, you know, we always knew that someday it will catch up.
Buzz, would love your thoughts, since you've been in this space for a very long time too, and you know, you're probably in similar circles at some point.
As far as where I started, or with all these, I don't know that we've run across each other, but
if you saw AI becoming what it is today,
you know, I guess you know, maybe it's a little bit egoic to say yes, but in seeing all the early iterations, what's happening, you follow Moore's law with processing power. I've been in technology all my career, and you can see just that when you have more and more compute power available and the ability of people and software, the internet, the way we can chain processors together to get access to data, yes, it was going to happen. It's a matter of how and where. Where's that inflection point? And it seems that within the last 4 months, we've really hit that inflection point.
It's amazing stuff. Mohan, so now that you're, you know, 30 years later, you're still in the AI space, what are some of the things that you've been working on the last few years, and where do you really put a lot of your energy into at the moment?
Yeah. So, you know, the last few years, you know, one of the things that I've been is when I was at Zynga, we did a lot of work on AI, you know, very specifically from like, you know, system level optimizations to how do you recommend, like, you know, players to play with each other in Words with Friends, or like, you know, a slot game, like, you know, when do you predict someone's going to churn out or someone's going to drop off the game, and what do you do to engage them, or what is their buying, like, you know, who are the people who could buy more, right? Like, there's all sorts of you know, analysis that we do, and in as much as a gaming company, Zynga is a data company as well, right? So it's used to do a lot of data analysis, right? After that, you know, I was part of an incubator and a venture studio where, you know, I co-founded many companies, and the primary theme of that was data and AI. Like, you know, be it in IoT, building out the very first edge computer that was used by GE, or like, you know, building out graph networks for recommendations, it's like, you know, multitude of use cases. But lately, I've been working quite a bit on very interesting topics about how to study human and machine perception, right? Like a lot more deeper as to how, you know, when there is stimuli, how is it that we perceive, right? You know, the work that we've done with Visario in collaboration at Stanford is to understand, like, you know, just by presenting people a small game and how they interact with it, we can understand various psychometrics of this individual in terms of their engagement, their tracking, their concentration, etc., and use that for, you know, various, like, you know, inferences as you would. And more recently at SkyHive, you know, it's a generative AI company trying to take the world from a job-based system to a skill-centric world, where we've organized the entirety of the world's labor market data, and you know, all the skills, all the jobs, you know, the various aspects of the labor market data, and how you organize that. And so, quite a bit of work in last few years, I must say, been very busy. And, you know, before generative AI became what it is right now, we've been using that, you know, as a means to find what are the skills and the skill relationships, or generating job descriptions, or generating somebody's resumes, you know, way back when GPT-2 was first open source. But now, you know, the open GPTs will hit a common substrate and hit a limit. I think, you know, the next would be GPT for companies, GPTs for sectors, or GPTs for you is the next phase. And that's what I'm working on at the moment at SkyHive, as to how we can take, like, you know, our generative AI models and personalize it for the companies we work with, the individuals we work with, or for the governments we work with.
That's a lot of stuff going on there. That's pretty deep. You think about all the different arenas that you're hitting. You know, speaking of SkyHive, you mentioned a lot of interesting points around skills, the labor force, the workforce. You know, what are your thoughts on that transition to sort of reskill and train people for a new workforce?
Yeah, so, you know, a few years ago it was hard, right, to tell people, like, you know, hey, shed away your decades of job-centric thinking and come into the skill-centric, because now, like, you know, those four-year degrees are useless, and you need to really reskill, and you have to do the jobs that you're really needed for. That was hard mindset transition. But COVID really helped us, right? Like, you know, the people started really rethinking, oh my God, the world can be this. And sudden, like, you know, forced transition for people. And now it's very much easier. It's like, you know, hey, like, you know, what should I do to reskill? Right? What is it that I really need? You know, I'm a dishwasher. Can I become a data scientist? Of course you can, right? And like, you know, there are 140 million career paths in the world. And each one of us can fit into that, right? Everyone has a unique skill DNA. And what is that? And what can we do? So, you know, we have this theory at Sky High, right? Like that. And we are looking at the inversion, the market inversion, right? Where supply, people, and demand, that is jobs, they're going to get inverted. And the people will become the demand and the jobs will become the supply. And you're going to see that quite a bit.
So the last portion you said right now, you said the jobs, the people, the jobs are going to be in demand and the people will be the supply.
The people will be the supply, right? See, usually what is supply? Supply is people, jobs are demand, right? The inversion is people will become the demand and the jobs will become the supply, right? And like, you know, you now get into like, you know, this massive skills exchange. I have all these skills, then I can be matched to these jobs and I could do multiple jobs wherever I would want, whichever country I live in, like, you know, don't care really, because it becomes a fully democratized, skill-centric world.
That's a very interesting point. And, you know, that is an interesting, massive shift in the way of, in the way people think. And, you know, I think we are now at a point in time where I think we have the lowest amount of confidence in four-year degrees, right? Like you mentioned, like, I think we're meeting this low point. And then there's all this talk about credentials and micro-credentials. Buzz, would love to hear you think, you know, your thoughts on, what are your thoughts on all of this as far as reskilling and upskilling and thinking about the new approach to the job market?
Well, I'm really quite fascinated with what Sky Hive is putting together, the whole idea that we have a unique skill DNA and that we could have a passport that we carry with us. It says we look at the data, there's 1 billion learners coming out of formal education between now and 2030, and they'll all have to be reskilled and upskilled. How do we know that they can do the job? What jobs are out there available for them? How do they know what they should even get credentialed in or to learn, or what might fit their path, or what company they want to work for, what skill set they would need, and sort of re-engineer the education or the micro-credential themselves. And it seems like the little I understand your company, Mohan, those are some of the things that you're thinking about and trying to tie AI technology. And it's very much needed, not only just from the job, but how do I take that all the way back to, say, AI software development companies that are trying to put new technology out in the marketplace? They need people to be able to architect it, to implement it, to integrate it in with the other systems that are out there. And that's a whole new set of skills that doesn't exist today in the people that they would need to hire to implement their technology. And so we have technology running far ahead of companies' ability to be able to consume it and people's ability to be able to operate it. And so really be interested in your thoughts on how we sort of get all that mix to work together at the same time, so that, you know, technology can grow as people can grow, as jobs can grow, as companies can grow, and make that all work.
Yeah, exactly. Like to your point, Buzz, like, you know, so we look at it from a four-sided labor market, right? It's people are job seekers, companies are job providers, policymakers are government, and learners are educators, right? It's a flywheel. Like, you know, people, like companies provide jobs, people get it, and then that forms there's policies associated with it, and then people learn, right? So that's a full flywheel into it. Now, what's the disconnect is each one is siloed completely. Like, you know, the companies don't know what they want. Like, are they poised for the future? And like, you know, where is it going to? Like, you know, what is it that they really want? Right? That's one. And in order for that, like, you know, you really need to understand, like, you know, what is the general talent architecture, right? The general job architecture within it. Like, you know, what is it that they have, right? And what is happening in the future, you know, when it comes to certain skills, like what skills are staying, what skills are going away, what skills are constant or reemerging, like, you know, how do we, you know, work towards that, right? And then it's the same thing when you translate it to the governments and the policymakers, because again, they don't know. They are relying on these, like, you know, reports and census, which is usually like, you know, 2 years older. And, you know, from what we have seen in the world from November till now, the world changed completely, right? Like, you know, decades of, like, you know, have happened in weeks. And like, you know, everybody's now really like, you know, what is a plan? Nobody has a plan because the plan changed and it is going to change, right? So that's where is the reality of the world at this moment. And so how do you keep track of all of that? And so for that, you really need a real-time view into how, like, you know, the skill-centric world is emerging and what does it mean to, like, the future of work for us? And then how do we make sure that this is educated? Is it formal education? Is it informal? Are these micro-credentials? What do we need to do? How can we, like, you know, quickly reskill, upskill people? And so it's just, like, you know, the confluence of it. And that's what we do day in, day out is, you know, work with, like, you know, these various sectors. But one important nuance is there is a general view of the world, but there's also hyperlocality. Like, every place is different. Every industry segment is different. And, like, you know, in every company is different. So how do you, like, you know, you want to unify all of it is very hard. You know, it's almost like, you know, you have to tailor it to what they would need. Like, how AI impacts in a construction industry is very different from how AI would, say, in an IT services company, right? Like, for example, the generative AI is like the greatest equalizer. That means that can take a junior programmer and co-pilot this junior programmer with the generative AI tools and really make, you know, this, you know, 1+1=3 equal to like a top-notch programmer out there. And that changes the economics, that changes the time, that changes everything for these people. So there's a big impact there, and how we see it, what needs to be done at the forefront of it, what needs to be done by these IT services companies now is what SkyHive really helps them, right? Now, like, you know, there are other places where, like, you know, because of generative AI, somebody's losing jobs or somebody's, what do we do, right? What are their closest career paths that they can have? Like, it's very, you know, it's very fascinating because, you know, during COVID, you know, we had a very public case study where, like, you know, the frontline hospitality workers weren't, like, you know, because everything shut down, there wasn't much happening, right? So what is their natural career transition? So based on the proximity study of their skills, we were able to match few of those workers to a solar panel installer. Like, you can now see, like, you know, the AI will not only augment, but also will also help people to see, you know, what all they can actually do right away, like, you know, based on the skill proximities. Like, some study that we did where 70% of the skills were transferable from, like, you know, old thermal energy systems to green energy.
Yeah.
Right? Right, things like that. It's very fascinating, very, very fascinating.
It is. As if you think about it over time, more of the flow of people towards jobs was more by word of mouth, and that, oh, there is a lot going on in the oil industry or the tech industry, or the gig economy comes up. Hey, this is, I'm driving for Uber and here's how I can make some money. It tended to be more word of mouth, maybe some advertising by those companies. But now we are in a position where we can really look at the skills more in real time, where they're evolving, where there's need. And by applying some of the AI technologies themselves, perhaps in blockchain, you can now start directing or showing people paths towards getting micro-credentials and certifications and moving towards where jobs are going to be, rather than having to wait for them to be there and there be a low supply. And then I have to go into a formal education program, which may take me months or years to be able to get there. You can, this more simultaneous availability of that supply and demand is what we have the opportunity to be able to achieve with some of these technologies.
Absolutely.
Mohan, what have been some of the challenges in navigating, you know, or some of the challenges in engaging with executives at different companies? Maybe there's some hesitation, maybe there's a lack of understanding. What are some of those challenges that you've seen out there with people trying to figure out how to navigate AI?
Yeah, so one of the first and the foremost challenges is the ethical use of AI, right? Like, you know, especially in the use cases that I'm dealing with is, like, you know, how do you make sure that it is equitable? How do you make sure that it's bias-free? And, like, you know, we are not unduly, like, you know, recommending someone or penalizing someone. And it comes in multitudes, right? Because we are a global company, like, you know, we got to make sure that there's equal representation for all languages. Like, you know, there's no bias involved and all of that. So ethical AI is a very, very big thing when it comes to, like, you know, talking to the execs. Like, you know, that's the first and the foremost important thing that is. The second part is, you know, not many people talk about this, but this is extremely important because this is the mind shift that, you know, thanks to ChatGPT, now people are aware of what AI is, and they also know that AI is not 100%, it is flawed, but it does a lot better than other systems. So this whole thinking of Turing completeness, or, like, you know, a deterministic engineering to probabilistic engineering is one of the biggest challenges. That is the fallacy of accuracy. Like, somehow people think that, like, you know, it has to be 100% accurate. And that is not possible, right? Like, you know, every now and then you will encounter certain things that probably don't seem right. Or, like, you know, and so how do you give it a try? And then over a period of time, the system learns and gets better. And so that it becomes as deterministic as possible. You know, it's a journey. Taking something that is probabilistic and making it into a deterministic is, like, you got to believe in it. You have to experience the power. Then you have to, like, you know, reinforce it and correct it. Like, you know, this whole cycle. That requires a lot of forward thinking, right? And, you know, some of the execs are risk averse, or, like, you know, they don't understand, or their priorities are different, their business priorities are different. They could be regulatory hurdles and all kinds of stuff. You know, those are the challenges that I have seen as I'm working with various execs.
Yes, those are really interesting. I think the ethics point is very, very sort of, it's a difficult challenge. I mean, I think at some point companies want to be competitive. They want to outdo others. But then the ethical component comes in, and it's like, well, no one ever even asked the ethical question on, you know, is this okay?
Yeah, exactly.
Buzz, would love to hear some of your thoughts on just navigating the space, and what do you think about when you think about all the things that Mohan has been saying?
I do, you know, knowing that there are. I'll say bad actors out there that will come up with different ways to exploit the technology that perhaps even haven't imagined is something that we need to watch, we need to guard against, need to be vigilant, just like we are vigilant, just like we are with all security these days. It goes in there. We need to do that. Yet at the same time, it will be here, just like the internet is here, just like cellular technology is here, all the other technologies that need to be able to use it and use it responsibly is important. So I go to really how do we get people skilled and ready to do it? And part of their skilling is the ethics. And then it's also how do we get it to work with existing technologies? I think in most of the time, if you look at each technology evolution or revolution, it's always that part where we have the existing technologies, the mainstream of what companies are using. We can take a ChatGPT in isolation and apply it a few places, but the broader gains, the bigger benefits are going to come from the integration into existing systems and how to make those work together as you're making that transition to a much more AI-centric world, operation, business, personal life from where you are today. That transition zone is always a place where things can break, people have challenges that allow opportunities for bad actors to come in and create mayhem. And it's really thinking through that process. How do I architect? How do I implement? How do I integrate? And having training and that built into the creation of the technologies as much as the technology itself will lead for faster, safer implementation.
Mohan, if you had one takeaway message for everyone out there regarding AI, what would it be?
Embrace it. It's like, you know, there are a lot of good and great things that will happen with AI. Embrace it. Just like, you know, just like as Buzz said, it is here to stay. And, you know, as with anything, like, you know, there are good things and bad things about it. Like, you know, so we just have to build guardrails against, you know, the bad things about it. But, you know, this is the golden period of AI. This is where, like, you know, it will really help and truly make us human beings what we are really good at, right? And, like, you know, just one example is people always thought that AI is really good at mundane and repetitive things and not creative, but generative AI thwarted it, right? And so it challenges us as well, like, you know, for us to be even superhuman or like, you know, how can we be more creative? So my singular message is it's not bad. Embrace it and be responsible in whatever you do.
Thank you so much, Mohan, for joining us all the way from Stanford, the heart of innovation.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
That's great to meet you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Certified Skills in AI and Tech podcast, brought to you by Criterion, where we provide platforms, software, and test development and delivery services for certification programs.